Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. The night before the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees were announced, the Go-Go's bassist Kathy Valentine tweeted, "I hope my phone and social media are blowing up tomorrow for the right reason." And then she added three fingers crossed emojis. Valentine and her bandmates got what they hoped for, and some say it's about time. The Go-Go's have been ineligible for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for the past 15 years, ever since their debut album, Beauty and the Beat, turned 25 in 2006. It was the first album by an all-female group, with songs written by and instruments played by, songs arranged by the members, to hit number one on Billboard in 1981, and it hasn't happened since. They hold the record, pun intended. The all-female L.A. punk pop outfit first exploded on the scene in 1981 with this hit. Thanks, see you later. What followed was an intense 4 years of dizzying success, never-ending touring, external pressures to keep the machine going, and the internal pressures of five young women trying to navigate business and friendship under a blinding spotlight. The Showtime documentary The Go-Go's follows the early rough-and-tumble days of the band as it navigates the L.A. punk scene, the magical moments they made as a group, the tough decisions to keep and lose members, and the forces that broke them apart, and the bonds that ultimately brought them back together. Director Allison Elwood joined us last summer to talk about the documentary when it premiered. In their very early years, The Go-Go's truly were a punk band, and I asked her what it was about the punk scene at that time that attracted the members of the band.
I think it was just a place of freedom for each of them. They could be, they could express themselves. They could be who they were without any judgment. It was a very welcoming community, and very inclusive. And they were all drawn to that.
The amount of footage you have is pretty incredible. Did you know you were going to have this treasure trove of video footage, or was it a happy surprise?
Well, I knew there was quite a bit out there, but it was certainly a happy surprise when we found certain things like the Elks Lodge thing. I don't think anyone's ever seen that footage. So there certainly were some amazing surprises. There's some amazing material from then.
How did starting in the punk scene set the Go-Go's up for success later on? Being part of an LA punk scene, what does that do for a band?
I think it just made them toughen up pretty quickly. I mean, it was really the tour in England that really toughened them, because they went there thinking they'd be really well received, and they were not at all. It was really hard. They were spit on and bottles thrown at them. They, you know, were opening for Madness and the Specials, who were ska bands, and these guys, you know, were girls from LA. It was a totally different scene. But I think it just toughened them up, and it also opened them, you know, creatively, because, as I said, the punk scene was so inclusive and allowed you to be who you were, that they were, you know, it enabled them to be free thinkers in terms of their songwriting and their musical chops as they grew.
How hard was it for them to land a record deal?
It was really hard. They you know, even though they'd come back from England, and you know, they were selling out shows and people were talking about them constantly, and they were huge. It, you know, no one would sign them. Ginger kept getting letters saying thanks, but all girl bands just don't make any money. And so it, you know, finally Miles Copeland at IRS came along and gave them a chance.
Three of the group's initial members, Belinda Carlisle, Jane Wiedlin, and Charlotte Caffey, were really ambitious. And I use that as a compliment. I think ambition in women is a compliment. But it was a source of tension at times. And two of the original members of the group left. Can you share why these members left?
Well, I think Alyssa, the original drummer, she was sort of torn between her work life and band life. And she herself in the film says, "I sort of stuck my toe in, but never dove in all the way." And Margot, who was the original bass player, I wouldn't say she wasn't ambitious. I would say that she just really wanted to remain a punk band, and the evolution of the band was becoming more pop. And she wasn't in favor of that. She wanted to remain a punk band. She identified with the punk scene, and you know, so ultimately they decided to, you know, move more toward the pop thing without her, which, you know, was hard on all of them, obviously hardest on Margot.
My guest is Allison Elwood, director of The Go-Go's, which you can now see on Showtime, by the way, the documentary. They really had to make some hard decisions, and in one case, it was walking away from someone, the manager, who was there from the beginning. At the time, why did the members of The Go-Go's think this was the right thing to leave their longtime manager?
Well, they'll all say that they actually didn't want her to leave. They wanted her to work with a bigger company because it was just becoming overwhelming for one person to manage. But from Ginger's perspective, the manager's perspective, she was, you know, had brought this band all the way up to, you know, number one record. And then suddenly, you know, she's being told, oh, okay, you did a great job, but we'll take it from here. It was insulting to her, so she just left. But the band members will all say that they actually didn't want her to leave. They wanted her to work with them. But it was not a situation that Ginger felt comfortable with.
And you get in the sense of the film that this their parting of ways still weighs very heavily on Ginger. What was it like to have to walk some of these women through some really tough memories? Because there's some tough stuff in the documentary, as well as joy. But there are some tough things that are said and relived.
Yeah, there was. And, you know, I mean, from the very beginning with all of them, including Ginger, too, you know, the pact that I made with all of them was, you know, you guys be honest with me and I'll tell a film that's honest and isn't a hagiography, but will have some real heart to it. And sometimes that includes warts and all. I mean, I was surprised how forthcoming that they were in the interviews. I think they were a little bit surprised about it, but they were very relaxed in conversational interviews. I'd gotten to know them all a little bit by that time. And, you know, I'm very happy that they agreed to be so honest.
And as we're talking about honesty, we get a sense early on in the film that mental health is going to be part of this story, especially with two of the main songwriters, Charlotte and Jane. And in the case of Jane, she reveals she had a lot of depression as a kid and was later diagnosed as bipolar. How did you want to handle the issue of mental health, and how did the subject come up with Jane? Did she want to talk about it? So first of all, how did you decide you wanted to handle it? And then how did you bring it up with Jane specifically?
Well, it's interesting, actually. She brought it up with me out of the blue in the middle of the interview. She announced that to me. And I did not know that. She had actually been quite recently diagnosed, like just within the year before we did the interview. And she, in fact, said that she didn't want me to tell the other band members that she had said that. She wanted them to learn it from watching the film. So that was kind of interesting. I wasn't sure how that was going to play out, but I ended up, that's exactly how we did it. I didn't say a word to them until they saw it in the film, and I think that they were all really moved by it, that the fact that she's willing to be, you know, be so open and talk about these things, and I think they're very happy for her that she's finally found some peace with this, because she has struggled with depression her whole life.
My guest is Allison Elwood, director of the documentary The Go-Go's. So, you know, you don't sit on it, but it's very clear there's sexism in the music industry, and it had an impact on their career in some ways. What do you think was perhaps one of the more significant ways that it hurt the band?
I think just how long it took for them to get a record deal,
right.
And then how. I mean, I think that was it. It just took so long, and that they were doing so well, and that they couldn't get anywhere, and other people were being signed, and they weren't being signed. And I think it was really, I think it was really hard on them. It was, you know, you trying to assess your position in a time when you're doing so well, and, you know, not getting the accolades for it. But finally, when Miles came through, that obviously shifted for them. But all the artists were very supportive of them. They never felt sexism from the artist, male or female.
You know, they're one of the great things about them is they all play and they can write music. But image was also part of it. They were just sort of these really cool LA girls. Was image important to them?
They were creating their own image. I mean, they were notorious for, you know, thrift shop buying. Mm-hmm. You know, they would go and buy all these crazy outfits at thrift stores, and you know, because even after they had been signed and had even two albums, the money really didn't start coming in until after the second album. So they didn't really have money, so they were always, you know, DIY. And even their sets, they would go to thrift stores and do these crazy, they were telling me just the other day about how some crazy set they did from going and buying all these weird paintings at a thrift store. So it was a very unique style, very, you know, do it yourself.
Yeah, there's a great story. We're going to play a clip from the documentary, The Go-Go's, where to make their video, the only way they got the money to do it was that the police, who were also signed to IRS, hadn't used their entire budget, so they gave the money to the Go-Go's. So here's band members Belinda Carlisle, Jane, and Gina. They're talking about how they really actually didn't take the music video thing very seriously at first, but ultimately how MTV became important to their success. And this clip has a cameo, by the way, from MTV's Martha Quinn. Let's listen.
The Go-Go's and MTV came up at the perfect time for each other because MTV was all about, this is what the artists that you love look like. They came along looking adorable and effervescent and fun. It just was a match made in heaven.
Well, it was a cheap music video, actually. Our Lips Are Sealed was done on a $6,000 budget, and that money came from a police video that they didn't spend all their money on, so Miles took the money and let us spend it.
We had no idea how important video was going to be, so we thought, this is a big waste of time. Why are we doing this? None of us took it seriously. We wanted to get arrested and have that on tape.
We decided if we jumped in the fountain, the Beverly Hills cops would come and arrest us. It would be a really great way to end the video. So we're sitting there, frolicking in the water, frolicking, frolicking, frolicking.
We jumped around in that goddamn fountain for quite a while, and nobody even paid any attention to us.
We know no one would arrest us.
Next thing you know, MTV is like the biggest thing in America, and they're showing the Go-Go's every half hour.
That's a clip from the documentary The Go-Go's. I'm talking to its director, Allison Elwood. We should also point out that they were having a ball also. They were having a great time. What's the most rock and roll story you heard from them?
Oh, gosh, there's so many. I mean, one of my favorite stories that didn't actually make it into the film is one time they were in, I think, Germany, and they decided to trash their dressing room and then felt so badly that someone else would have to come in and clean up after them that they cleaned it up themselves, and their road manager said, you girls are not Motley Crue.
You know, one of the, a really interesting part of the documentary, sort of the peek behind the scenes of what it means to be a band, is the conflict over publishing. How did this end up being such a difficult issue for this band of women?
Well, mostly because, you know, Charlotte and Jane and then Kathy, when she joined, they became the predominant songwriters. And, you know, Belinda in the film says, I was having too much fun. I let the others do the writing. And I think Gina just didn't ever necessarily think about it at that time. She just was, I'm the drummer, I'm going to provide the drums and the beat. And, you know, so it was, you know, for Belinda and Gina to be making so much less money than the other three, I think was really hard when they found out. They didn't know for a while. You know, but it's a classic problem with rock bands, and very few, I mean, the few bands like U2 and REM, I think, are two of maybe only a few bands that from the get-go mm-hmm. decided to not, you know, delineate the publishing, that it would be split evenly. And, you know, as a result, they didn't go through that.
In the documentary, there are very candid things said. There are some hurtful things that are recalled. How was it difficult to get them all together to do this documentary? I'm curious what if that was a challenge or not.
So they came to me. They were ready to do a film, but then they kind of balked a little bit, and it took about a year to convince them mm-hmm. to actually go forward. And then, you know, we just interviewed everybody individually. And then they came together at the end. They then called me and said, hey, we're writing a new song. And I said, okay, great, we've got to film it. So we sort of put it on pause for a little bit. and then went back to film the scene at the Whiskey where they, you know, write, they were still in the process of writing the song at that point. They subsequently finished it and recorded it, and it's the end credits.
That was my conversation with director Allison Elwood about her documentary, The Go-Go's, available to watch on Showtime and other on-demand platforms. The band is among the inductees for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class of 2021. When the Go-Go's were asked in a recent Rolling Stone interview how they imagine it will feel to stand at the podium in Cleveland and finally accept the award, drummer Gina Schock said, quote, "We might need those five little Go-Go mobiles to drive us around the stage. We can put flags in the back. It'll say Go-Go's, but it'll be great for us all to be together. The five of us actually made it. We made it. We're all alive."